Sunny and 75 degrees in Kenosha, 74 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. And today, it is once again the monthly visit to the morning show of our good friend Nan Calvert from Root Pike Wynn. And for a strange turnabout, on this occasion, Nan has not come to the program with a guest, but rather I have. And I want to explain briefly that I'm an alum of Luther College in Decorah, Iowa. And during the most, when I received the most recent issue of Luther Magazine, which is sent out to alums, here was this beautiful spread that described the work of Steve Hopkins, who was a very good friend of my brother Steve. In fact, I'm pretty sure they were classmates at Luther. In fact, I think roommates maybe for a while, but at any rate, classmates at Luther. And I knew Steve would get to know him when I would come to visit my brother, and came to really appreciate him and his sort of mature outlook on life and his place in the world. And he's indeed gone on to do great work with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. And that's what this article in Luther Magazine was about the work that Steve Hopkins has done on behalf of stream restoration and raising public awareness for the importance of watersheds. And since this is something really important to Nan Calvert, of course, with Root Pike Wynn, it seemed like a natural fit for her program. So I made the suggestion to Nan, who eagerly received the idea. And so here we are over the telephone speaking with Steve Hopkins, who is actually, I think, officially non-point source coordinator in the Water Quality Improvement section of the Water Quality Bureau of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. And before too long, we'll have Steve Hopkins parse through all of those layers, and we'll get to the heart of what he does with the Iowa DNR. And so for once, it doesn't happen actually all that often. We are talking about an important issue, but with somebody who's from a neighboring state. So I'm really excited about this. And Steve Hopkins, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you very much, Greg. That was very flattering. And I should mention that a lot of the credit goes to my team in the Water Quality Improvement section, and it shouldn't be on me. But I appreciate all the words that you've said.
Well, it's good to have you here. And Nan Calvert is right here in the studios with us, and I know she's excited about this conversation as well.
Yes, I am, because, you know, I think I've said it before, all the water we have is all the water we have. So essentially, you know, we're all connected in that regard. And it's inspiring and good to know what other states are doing in their watersheds.
So, Steve, before we get to talking about specifically the work that you are doing with the Iowa DNR, I think it's good for our listeners to just learn a little bit about who you are, where you come from originally, and maybe a little bit about where all of this interest in the environment comes from. So tell our listeners a little bit about where you were born and raised. If my memory serves me correctly, you and I have actually lived in a couple of the same towns, but just not at the same time.
That's true. Good memory, Greg. I'm an Iowa native, so I was born in Des Moines when my parents lived in Ankeny, Iowa, just north of Des Moines. Although I started school in Atlantic, Iowa, and I believe you have also lived in Atlantic, Iowa, so that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And then our family moved from Atlantic, Iowa to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And I went to middle school and high school in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. However, our family had very strong Iowa ties and had come back to visit relatives in Iowa during the entire time we lived in Pennsylvania. And I returned to go to college in Iowa at Luther College in Northeast Iowa, which you know very well is very well from having gone there. So I would say I grew up in both Iowa and Pennsylvania, but have a lot of ties with my relatives, having lived in Iowa actually since the 1860s.
Wow. So growing up, what were the things that were of the most interest to you? I know you played some sports, but obviously also seemed to love the natural world around you, or at least that's the sense I get.
That's true. There were several things. I was always very interested in environmental issues. I was also very interested in agriculture. My dad worked for DeKalb Seed Corn Company, and I had multiple generations of farmers from Iowa in my background, and so I would visit my aunts and uncles' farms in Iowa as I was growing up. And so it's really, I think, a combination of being interested in the environment and agriculture and the interaction of the two. And when I was at Luther College, I created my own major called human ecology, which was a combination of biology and anthropology. I also studied soil science as an independent study when I was at Luther. So it tied in with my interest in agriculture and the environment.
That's really intriguing, this idea of creating your own major. Do you remember what specifically prompted you to do that and how complicated an undertaking that was?
What prompted me to do that was at that time, which was about 40 years ago, Luther College didn't have an environmental studies major. If they had that at that time, I may have been an environmental studies major. But my interest was really in environmental biology, and I was interested in how we as people engage the environment. So that's why I combined the two, several disciplines of environmental biology and anthropology in studying the human use of the environment.
So,
at that time, there was a mechanism to create our own majors at Luther. And so I was encouraged to do that and did it.
Once you graduated from Luther, where did your professional path first take you?
I went to the state of Nebraska for a while. I worked at a nature preserve that was operated in the just north of the Sand Hills of Nebraska. It was owned by the Nature Conservancy. And then I worked with the Center for Rural Affairs' Small Farm Resources Project, which was based in Hardington, Nebraska, in northeast Nebraska. So that was a project that worked directly with a group of farmers that were trying to implement soil conservation and water quality practices on their farms in a low-cost way in Cedar County, Nebraska, primarily. So that continued to launch my interest in agriculture and environment, and then I moved to Madison to work on my master's degree in land resources at University of Wisconsin-Madison, which I completed after that.
Tell us when you began working at the Iowa Department of Natural Resources and what you did at the outset, or from the start, have you been with the Water Quality Bureau?
I started working with the Iowa DNR, as we call it, back in the year 2000, so almost 22 years ago is when I started. I worked initially in the water supply section. However, I worked in the septic system program and the private water well program. So that I was, in fact, first hired to help create a low-interest loan program for Iowans to be able to pay for and install new septic systems to replace their outmoded septic system. So it was based on improving water quality. Prior to that, I had worked in Jasper County, Iowa, as the county sanitarian. So in that job, I had worked directly with in helping to approve and permit new septic systems. So that was my expertise in that particular area, which led me to the DNR. And so I had a lead worker that I worked with at DNR on both the septic system and private well program. From there, I became a supervisor in the water supply operations section, which oversaw drinking water supplies in the state. And then I moved into the non-point source program, which is the program I'm currently in. And that's a program that I felt was closer to my interest in my roots in wanting to work to help promote soil conservation and improve water quality that deals with runoff from the land.
And I would love to have you clarify what this position really means, non-point source coordinator. What exactly does that terminology refer to?
Yeah, that's a good question. I didn't create that term. So the term non-point source was a term that was created by the Environmental Protection Agency, and it's based on the Clean Water Act. When the Clean Water Act was written and was then put under the jurisdiction of the EPA, it divided pollution into two different categories. They referred to point source pollution as pollution that is water pollution that comes out of a pipe. So that would be discharges from wastewater treatment plants or industries that have a discharge. And anything that requires, that goes through a pipe and requires a permit is by EPA's definition point source. Everything else, every other source is considered non-point source, and that usually refers to runoff from any land surface, whether it's from a farm field or from a person's yard or from streets or parking lots. All of that is considered non-point source based on the EPA definition of non-point source. It's a program definition, and so that's my job at Iowa DNR is to help implement Iowa's non-point source plan, which we're required to have, as all states have, to try to implement practices that reduce non-point source pollutants, again, which is runoff that doesn't come through a permitted pipe that affects water quality in streams, rivers, lakes, and wetlands downstream.
So probably most people are maybe more acquainted with or more clearly grasp the first kind, the point source, where it's some awful-looking factory with awful-looking pipes discharging awful-looking stuff right into a lake or a river. I mean, that is the sort of the clearest example of what we think of as damaging pollution. So you're talking about something which, in a sense, is subtle in the sense of maybe not so visible to the naked eye, but that doesn't make it less significant. And perhaps in some ways it's a more significant issue with which we're grappling right now. Would that be a fair way to summarize it?
That would be one way of summarizing it. And point source pollution historically was made more famous when the Cuyahoga River in Ohio caught fire. And there were, because that created such an outrage about environmental issues, that led to the creation of the EPA and led to the passage of the Clean Water Act and led to specific actions to help control point source pollution. That was the first step. And so you're right, you know, just thinking about that time period, which would have been the late 60s, and then the EPA was created in 1970. That was the first attempt to try to control that type of water pollution. So you're right. That's a clearly identifiable program to try to clean up waters based on those type of pipe discharges.
But of course, curbing that is not nearly enough, because there is this other kind of pollution that is every bit as serious.
It is every bit as serious and probably more complicated to understand and creates more complication to try to figure out solutions for dealing with non-point source pollution, because it's dealing with runoff from many different surfaces and does not have the same type of regulations that point sources have. So there's much, much less regulation regarding non-point source pollution. And partly as a response to EPA realized that we didn't fix all of our water quality problems by having a point source regulation across the country. And so they created a new program that was called the EPA Section 319 program that created funding two states to develop a non-point source program on a voluntary basis and then fund projects through their annual EPA Section 319 grant. State of Iowa gets it, and that's what I administer for Iowa DNR. The state of Wisconsin also has a non-point source program. So that's, in essence, the bulk of my job is to implement our EPA Section 319 grant that we use to fund watershed improvement projects around the state of Iowa, as well as to fund statewide projects or, in some cases, smaller projects, all of which are designed to try to improve water quality, either on a watershed basis, or in some cases, that might be in a smaller area. But again, the intent is the same, to try to improve water quality based on addressing non-point source pollutants. Mm-hmm.
So, Nan Calvert, I'm sure this all sounds very familiar to you. Does any of this sound different in terms of the way Iowa is going about this versus what Wisconsin does about these issues?
No, not particularly. I mean, all municipalities here in Wisconsin have to work directly with the DNR on their non-point source pollution, and they have permits that they have to fulfill and document very clearly what they're doing, what projects are they involved in, what programs do they have, what are they planning for the future, what exactly are the main problems in terms of stormwater runoff quality and certainly water quality in general as it relates to lakes, rivers, streams, and so on. And I'm certain it's quite similar in Iowa as it is in Wisconsin, depending upon which watershed you're looking at. Each watershed has a different concentration of problems, challenges to address, based actually on human activity and human population. And so if you look at Milwaukee County, you look at Racine County, Kenosha County, Waukesha County, we have a terrible problem with chloride contamination of fresh water. If you go elsewhere in Wisconsin to much less dense population centers, that's not necessarily the problem that they're looking at. It isn't to that degree as it is in our area, and no doubt that happens in Iowa as well. And certainly I think all states face different challenges in terms of stormwater runoff and water quality issues that are addressed by the DNR and the EPA, obviously.
And Nan, just it might be helpful for Steve to understand the group for whom you work, the Root Pike Win, what that organization is, and what, for instance, their relationship is with Wisconsin's DNR.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yes. So Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network is a nonprofit organization that works on stormwater runoff issues and water quality in the Root Pike Watershed Basin. And Root Pike Win does a number of things, and we bring projects and partners together to address those kinds of things. Runoff issues, flooding issues, those are often addressed with very large-scale restoration projects. Root Pike Win focuses on using native plant communities to help forestall flooding and ponding and runoff volume and velocity. For example, we have a project that's not very old quite yet. It's getting to be about 2 years old. It's a regenerative stormwater conveyance system on the corners of a very busy Highway 31 and KR. And so the regenerative stormwater conveyance system uses native plants and some engineering in order to handle a large volume of stormwater runoff. Then there are restoration projects throughout the watershed that restore wetlands, woodlands, prairies, in order to so that native plant communities and their amazing root systems can handle stormwater runoff and precipitation and so on and so forth. We do it in a variety of different ways. We also have an education and outreach arm of Root Pike Wind called Respect Our Waters that works directly with 20 to 21 different municipalities within the watershed to raise awareness within the municipalities and their residents about stormwater quality, stormwater runoff, watershed issues that people can do something about, residents can do something about, businesses can do something about. So the problem of freshwater contamination is approached in a variety of ways.
Hmm. So, Steve, does that sound like the kind of thing where there are organizations also in Iowa working on this at that particular level?
There are some organizations, Nan, that sounds like great work, by the way. So kudos to you and your organization for that. We do have some similar organizations. It sounds like your work and that organization is really ambitious. Mm-hmm. I think the outreach component, at least that's my perspective, is that many people are not aware of where their runoff goes. I would say most people are not aware. So therefore, the work that you're doing in your organization to try to teach people about that, make them more aware of what happens to their runoff, where does it go, does it carry pollutants with it, is so important because it motivates them to make changes in their behavior or in their actions. Otherwise, without that knowledge, they really have very little motivation to make any changes in their behavior.
Mm-hmm. For those of you just joining us, I am speaking today on the morning show with our good friend Nan Calvert, speaking with Steve Hopkins, who is the non-point source coordinator for the Water Quality Improvement Section of the Water Quality Bureau of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. And so we are talking about the good work that Steve and others with the Iowa DNR are doing when it comes to some of the most vexing issues related to water quality. Steve Hopkins, maybe you could just say a word about how you would characterize kind of the overall climate in the state of Iowa right now in terms of the work that the DNR does, and particularly the work that's being done by the Water Quality Bureau. I mean, I'm sure it's maybe not an easy thing to summarize or quantify, but in terms of just kind of the general receptiveness of the most significant players in some of these issues in terms of being receptive to what the Iowa DNR wants to enact and wants to see happen?
Well, that's a good question, Greg. I'm not sure that I can speak for all in terms of their perceptions of what our department does. However, just to speak to some of the water quality issues that are major issues in the state of Iowa, just following up on some of the points that Nan made. In Iowa, our landscape has, just to compare it to Wisconsin, we have a lot of our land that is in corn and soybean production. And so either runoff from corn and soybean land or even nitrate or phosphorus that reaches subsurface tie lines underneath farm fields can become a conduit of excess nutrients then entering a downstream stream or river or lake. And so a lot of our work has been to try to quantify the amount of runoff coming from farm fields, but also to address other lands in the state where we have runoff, which really includes not just farm fields, but also areas that are either in pasture or that are in even public land may have a lot of pollutants running off of them, and especially where we have untreated stormwater, like Nan was referring to, we know that we have nutrients as well as high levels of bacteria that reach our waters that we're trying to create programming to address in some way. Most of the work that we're doing in our watersheds that are agricultural is where we have a watershed coordinator who works directly with farmers and landowners in the watershed to help them implement conservation practices to address a specific pollutant. So we may have a watershed project that has a specific objective to reduce nitrate levels, which is high nitrates are an issue in our streams and lakes in the state of Iowa, as well as some of our public drinking water sources. But we also have other projects that are attempting to reduce levels of bacteria in waters, especially if they're recreational waters, or reducing phosphorus, which is a major cause of algae blooms in lakes and streams. So we put together very specific watershed management plans that prioritize which types of non-point source pollutants we're trying to address first, and then provide financial incentives to help install practices to reduce those pollutants. And then probably the most important thing is simply how we provide funding to have a watershed coordinator in place to help reach out to farmers and landowners directly and offer them, as at least to inform them of a suite of funding sources that can create incentives for them to put in practices to help improve water quality. So in the state of Iowa, most of our non-point source work is in agricultural watersheds, trying to reduce nutrients or other types of pollutants. Specific to our non-point source program, however, EPA requires that we use our Section 319 funding to try to address impaired waters. And so all of our watershed plans that we're trying to implement are specific to trying to address an impaired stream or river or lake, and specific to which pollutants that are causing the impairment. So the solutions can get pretty technical, but on the other hand, it's a lot of work that requires a lot of face-to-face conversation between our watershed coordinators and the landowners in that watershed.
Before we dig into maybe some of those specifics, I think it would be interesting to have you talk about one of the ways in which you are using some of this Section 19 grant money, and that is specifically towards trying to increase public awareness of the watersheds and their significance. And some of that work for enhancing public awareness has to do with something as simple and basic as signage, as putting up signs. And I just love this idea. It makes all the sense in the world. Tell us a little bit about the origins of this idea and what you think what kind of significant difference it can make to erect signs that offer up some of this information.
Well, thanks for asking the question. It is one of my favorite topics, so thank you, Greg. I had been very interested in trying to increase Iowans' awareness of their own local stream when we became aware, simply through our watershed project meetings in the past, where oftentimes our watershed coordinator would put a map, an aerial photo or a map of the watershed on the wall, and then landowners would look at it very closely and find their land and then realize which direction the runoff would go. I think in general, most people in rural areas know where their runoff goes to, but time after time, simply having that conversation in a public meeting that showed exactly where the runoff would go from properties down to the water body, I kept hearing the comment where people would say, "Oh, I had no idea my runoff went that way." And it led me to believe that we need to take a step back and create more awareness of our local waters. We also, in part in response to a lot of those comments, had done some surveys of people in different areas. We had done a survey as part of our Iowa non-point source management plan, where we surveyed Iowans' knowledge of water quality issues, and it's variable like it is in every place. But one of the discoveries was that in some cases, in some areas, Iowans don't even know the name of their local creek, much less know anything about how it might be polluted. And so it seemed to me that a very simple thing that we could do that's relatively inexpensive is at least put up a sign identifying the name of a local creek to help locals, if they weren't aware of the name of the creek, at least that would help inform them of the name of the creek. But also if they did know the name of the creek, simply having a sign installed was a reminder to them that the creek that they crossed day after day after day on that bridge. It was a reminder to them that not just about the creek itself, but it also, in my opinion, helped them care more about the creek's water quality. And I know that other states have installed creek signs as a way to inform people of their local creeks. In Iowa, the Iowa Department of Transportation had a policy of only installing signs at river crossings, but not creek crossings. So we had approached the Iowa Department of Transportation with the idea of offering them funding on a limited basis to pay for creek signs within our watershed project areas if they installed them, and that's what they did. So we launched what we called the Stream Sign Initiative in 2014, where we used some of our Section 319 funding within watershed areas to install creek signs. And to date, we've had over 650 creek signs installed around the state. And this became popular with a lot of local watershed groups, not just because it created awareness of the name of the creek, but it also became a source of pride in many cases that people became aware of the name of the creek and were then interested in doing something to protect it. So it led to some spin-off efforts by other groups around the state that also installed creek signs with other sources of funding around the state with other through other watershed projects. So based on several different creek signage initiatives that at least I'm aware of, we've had almost 1,300 creek signs installed within the state of Iowa since 2014, since we launched that effort. And we intend to continue that within our work at Iowa DNR to not just label creeks, but also to label the watershed that those creeks are in as a way to help make the connection between the local creek and the downstream water body and the overall watershed that it's in. And I should clarify that when I'm talking about a watershed, I'm talking about an area of land that all of the runoff from that land goes to a specific point, either a lake or a stream or river downstream. Mm-hmm. So we want to inform people not just about their creek, but also the watershed that it's in, so that they can then care about it and take actions to help improve the water quality downstream.
My understanding is that you are the person who chooses which of these creeks or streams will be given a sign. And in some cases, are we talking about creeks and streams that need to be named as well? Or typically, do they already have a name that it's just maybe something the public's not aware of?
Well, to clarify, I have been the lead person with the work that we're doing between Iowa DNR and the Department of Transportation. So it's true that I have selected which creeks would get signs on the roads, the highways in Iowa that are controlled by Iowa DOT within watershed project areas, just to help enhance visibility of those creeks. That's not the case for any other effort that's been done separate from our contract with Iowa DOT. So it's not just me, it's many others that are making those decisions about which creeks get signed. And I'm sorry, what was the second part of your question, Greg?
I just wondered if most of these streams and creeks, do they already have a name that just the public isn't necessarily aware of? Or, I mean, are you also, in a sense, in the business of naming creeks and streams? Or by and large, do they usually already have a name?
The signs that we have paid for and installed are based on creeks that already have names. However, it's true that there are still a number of creeks and streams that are unnamed, that do not have an official name. And I was involved with one particular effort in Newton, Iowa, where I used to live, where I had worked with the Newton High School biology teacher to take on a class project to change the name of the local creek that starts right by Newton High School, and this is where my two sons went to high school and graduated from there. The former name of the creek was Sewer Creek, and so it had a really negative name that not many people knew about. And so I proposed the idea to Courtney Wolken, who's the high school biology teacher, to have their class adopt the creek and consider a name change of that creek. And they decided to propose to change the name of the creek to Cardinal Creek, because that's the mascot name of Newton High School in Newton, Iowa. And the name Cardinal is all over the town. It's on the water tower. It's painted on buildings in Newton, Iowa. So it has, it's, you know, the name Cardinal is revered locally because of the mascot there. And so the high school biology class took it on as a class project to officially apply to change the name of that creek. And that's done through the U.S. Board of Geographic Names. And I helped provide support letters for it, and it became official. And so that creek that starts right by Newton High School is now called Cardinal Creek. That biology class has started doing water monitoring on the creek and has incorporated it into its biology curriculum. And then we funded the installation of a sign on Interstate 80 right at Newton over Cardinal Creek. So, Greg, as you drive from Wisconsin to Atlantic, Iowa, you should be able to see the Cardinal Creek sign right at Newton. So,
I love that. I would like to make a point of looking for it, because I think that's a terrific sign. I know from the article in Luther Magazine that Iowa State University did some kind of a study that really tried to quantify the effectiveness of this kind of signage, that it really does make a difference in terms of enhancing the public's understanding of watersheds and waterways and how all of this is connected.
It does. That study that was done was a preliminary stream sign assessment that Iowa State did. And so they have lots of data based on assessment surveys that they did of Iowans last summer. And the data show that the installation of creek signs definitely help enhance Iowans' awareness of creeks. We haven't done a full-fledged social science survey that would show that the installation of creek signs changed behavior. So we haven't gone that far with our data collection yet. But in terms of enhancing awareness, there's no question about it. It's certainly made people more aware of their creeks. And I get comments all the time from people who are involved with watershed projects who will make the comment, I didn't know the creek went there. And so simply the installation of a creek sign on a major highway is a surprise to people, because in many cases they just have no idea where a creek starts, where it flows into. Hmm. And that's the whole point of this effort, is to enhance awareness, make people aware of their local waters. Hmm.
You can't see it, but Nan is smiling and nodding as you are describing this.
Yes, absolutely. you know, this is stuff we don't learn when we're in school, and unfortunately, it hasn't boded well for our fresh water. And I think, you know, if we did have it in school from the very beginning, learning about local creeks, rivers, streams, and what is a watershed, really what is your real address, you know, outside of your street name and street number, getting people to connect to that directly would go such a long way to improving water quality and certainly changing our behavior. So, you know, applause for what you're doing. Really well done.
So, Steve Hopkins, in this article in Luther Magazine, it says very specifically that one of your main goals is that you would like to see agriculture and clean water side by side. That is, there is room for both, even though certain agricultural practices can certainly harm our waters if we're not careful. What do you see as the most important strategies for creating a scenario in which agriculture is going on, as it does so extensively in the state of Iowa, in a way that allows the waterways adjacent to it to be as clean as possible?
Well, I would say that efforts like the Creek Sign Project is simply a first step. It's to create awareness, not just for farmers and landowners, but it's for everyone. And it's a way to help create more responsibility, to help us take ownership of our local waters. It's also a way for us to kind of keep an eye on what's going on. And so, you know, if we know the name of our local creek, know where it flows, what it flows into, then all of us will be more likely to be concerned about what goes on in the entire watershed that runs off and flows into that creek. So the first step is awareness, I would say. Then, you know, following that, I think that we really need to have much more information out there about the water quality, the specific water quality parameters of our streams and lakes. And that's something that we're constantly trying to provide information about and probably never do it well enough. And so it's something we always need to make sure we're providing more information about the current water quality and be honest about if it's not meeting water quality standards, explain how it's not, what pollutant is causing the problem, and why that's a problem, to be very specific about it. And in some cases, we have to identify which pollutant is causing the water quality problem, whether it's an excess nutrient or whether it's bacteria. And then it's a matter of, well, what we do in our watershed plans, identifying different sources of those pollutants downstream. And I think that's, once we get to that stage, and these are multiple steps, the awareness, creating more knowledge about water quality in our waters, and then directly engaging everyone who has some control over land use, whether it's public land, private land, farms, towns, street runoff, parking lots. We need to install practices or consider providing incentives. Sometimes it's even a matter of creating programs or maybe creating incentives within either city zoning rules or other areas to try to create more incentives for water quality practices. Oftentimes a matter of trying to install practices that infiltrate runoff instead of having it run off downstream. And it sounds like that's what Nan's group is doing, mm-hmm. is providing more ways to try to infiltrate runoff. And we just need to do more of that. We have altered our landscape incredibly over the last 150 years. So we need to study how it's been altered. And in some cases, try to install practices that help, that are very specific to either reducing runoff or reducing the pollutants from that runoff. So there's no one thing. I think it's a whole suite of things. But it's this effort, this last conversation we've had about creek science as a way to help launch that conversation by creating more awareness for everyone.
Yes, I think, Steve, you said something really important there. All of what you have said is important, actually. But you mentioned incentivizing people to do better. And certainly there are instances where that's working. And one of those places actually is Ithaca, New York. It's a really interesting program sponsored by the mayor, created by the mayor of Ithaca, New York, to incentivize especially businesses with expanses of lawn or turf grass to switch that out for native plants to promote stormwater runoff infiltration. And so when municipalities, when state governments can do that, it really goes a long way to protecting and enhancing water quality.
Steve, we have just a minute or so left. I just wonder, in the years that you have been working with the Iowa DNR, how would you sort of trace the arc in terms of, generally speaking, the public's receptiveness to this? Do you feel like you've gained some ground in terms of people understanding the significance of these issues and the role that they can play in it?
I hope we have increased awareness and understanding of water quality issues, but I would be quick to say we have a long ways to go to educate citizens and the public about water quality issues. So this work, it's what I call generational work. It's not something that we're going to fix in a year or even 10 years or 20 years. This is multiple generational work to try to identify how what we do on the land affects the water. And it's we need to continually have these conversations and provide more and better information of it about it as best as we can.
Very well put. Steve Hopkins is with the Water Quality Bureau of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, doing tremendously important work on their behalf. Steve Hopkins, it's been just great to reconnect with you today on the morning show. And I'm so grateful to you for making time in your schedule to have this conversation, and certainly wish you well as you continue on working on so many of these important issues. Very best wishes to you.
Thanks very much for having me on the program. It's been fun. It's we haven't, you and I have not talked in a long time, so I look forward to talking with you again. And Nan, it's been great visiting with you.
Oh, thank you. Same here.
Well, Nan, I thought that would be fun, and I think it proved to be, and a lot more than fun, but really enlightening, too.
It certainly did. That was great.
Yeah. Glad we had this conversation, and we'll look forward to pursuing these topics with other guests in the future, of course. In the meantime, I know that you have at least a couple of different announcements about things going on that some of our listeners should know about.
I do. You know what? It is summer concert series at Hawthorne Hollow, again, for 2022, the Pike River Concert Series. And this Friday, June 17th, the gates will open at 5 and the concert begins at 6 p.m. The featured musical artist will be Empty Bottle Boys and One Shot Jane. It's $10 per person. There's food and drink available for purchase. And there will be fresh produce available as well from the Hawthorne Hollow Farm. So think about getting out outside and cool in the cool evening, cooler evening, and taking in some really great music at a terrific venue. Riverbend Nature Center will host a safety in chainsaw use and tree felling on Saturday, June 18th from 9 a.m. until 10:30. This is a free of charge event. Reservations are not required, but they would like to know if you're planning on attending. So you can call the main number 262-639-1515 or email info@riverbendracine.org. Free donations, free will donations are always welcome and appreciated. And finally, Invasive Species Workday at Pringle Nature Center, June 25th from 9 a.m. till 12 p.m. You can earn service hours, or, you know, if you're simply interested in helping us improve and preserve native habitats, you can join the fun. There's a monthly invasive species work day on the fourth Saturday of each month, April through October. Pringle Nature Center staff will be there to, you know, show you and help you identify what's to be removed. Tools are provided, but you should bring your own gloves if possible. No registration is required. Just come and leave as you like. And that's it.
Very good. Nan Calvert, we look forward to seeing you in July with more interesting guests. So
I will be back.
All right. Take care, and thanks for today's morning show.
Thank you.
Tomorrow's morning show will include a conversation with best-selling author Soman Chenani, who has just released the latest in that series that they've produced called School for the Good and Evil. This latest book is a prequel called Rise of the School for Good and Evil, one of the most popular fantasy series in recent years. Today's going to be sunny, windy, and hot, but not quite as hot as yesterday. A high today of 86 degrees. Winds at times up to 35 miles per hour. Clear overnight, mild. Our low tonight, 61. Tomorrow, sunny and a high of just 78. And Saturday, sunny and a high of just 73. Sunday, sunny and 83. We are going to warm up again early next week, back up into the 90s. NPR News headlines are next. This is WGTD HD. Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.